I want to thank you for letting me be here today to be with you. Can all of you here back in this area, okay, can you turn that speaker there, just maybe Marvin, turn that speaker there a little bit, and then we'll aim this one here because these people over here can't hear. See if that helps any at all. Can you hear all right? I think probably we'll get warmed up, and we're going to be addressing a subject on a broad basis that is of urgent demand in the brotherhood today. We are a divided people, and until we rearrange some of our foundations, there's not much use in talking about specifics. But I have come to this workshop to talk about specifics, but each day that we meet, and there'll be three of them, we'll deal with different material each day. I'm going to take about 5 minutes at the beginning of each session, maybe 10, and talk about one specific principle that illustrates the general subject matter of how to differ without dividing. Now, does that confuse you? I'm going to talk for about 10 minutes at the beginning of each hour and present a specific principle that will deal with the general subject. And then we're going to go into a discussion of the areas of friction that are being generated today when a ministry of the campus ministry, and particularly the Crossroads ministries, are introduced into existing congregations. There are some areas of friction that seem to always be present, and that's not good or bad, it just is. And anytime you bring in differing speeds and differing opinions and differing intensities, you're always going to have some friction. Anytime you bring a man and a woman together in marriage, you're always going to have friction. So don't worry about friction, it's how you handle it that counts. So we're going to be talking about some things that will be of very specific interest to you. I want to appeal to you to join me and join Marvin Phillips and join some of these other brethren who are working intimately with this problem that's confronting us. We're asking that you join us in an all-out attempt to heal and not alienate, to reconcile and not estrange. And if we can do that, if we can build bridges instead of walls and can cause people to love instead of hate and can cause them to be healed rather than irritated, then we'll be engaged in a good work. So we're going to do that. Let me just say that the first principle that I want to talk to you about today as a specific illustration of this broad message of how to differ without dividing is simply this, that diversity is an inherent quality within Christianity. Diversity is an inherent quality within Christianity. The Christian movement was projected in the Old Testament as being a movement of diversity, that it would include both Jew and Gentile. There is a diversity nationally, Jew and Gentile. That means people of every tongue, every tribe, every nation, every people. All of this diversity of nationality was intended by God to be brought into the body of Christ, and that difference and the diversity of nationality would be one of the main characteristics of the Christian movement that sets it apart from other movements and other religions. The religion of Jesus Christ is a nationally multiple, a multinational movement. So there is diversity of nationality. That's by God's plan. But a second thought, there is a difference in the, well, if you want to put down a chapter, put Ephesians 2 by that, because that's what it talks about. Those that were afar off were brought near, and those that were near were brought near. And because of the diversity, Christ gave us his life, and through his body brought both those that were far off and those that were near into one body, presented them to God through the cross, thereby bringing unity and peace. But a second thought, and this comes from Romans the 12th chapter, not only are we different nationally, there is a diversity of talents, a diversity of gifts. You don't have the same talent I've got. I don't have the same talent that you have. We're all different. We're all diverse. We're all different parts of the body. You may be an eye, or you may be an ear. You may be a big toe. Somebody may be an elbow. You know, you've got to have it all if we're going to have the parts of the body that make up a complete body. He intends for there to be unity in the body. He did not intend for there to be uniformity in the body. There's a great difference between unity and uniformity. And any effort that does not recognize the diversity of the body and at the same time the unity of the body is not going to make it as a movement. It's not going to be recognized as Christianity as it ought to be. But there's a third difference, and that is there is diversity of personality. We don't have time to go into this. I wish we did, because I'd love for you to see what kind of a personality you are. There are a lot of us that are verticals. There are a lot of us that are horizontals. Some of us are people-oriented. Others of us are rule-oriented. Some of us would have to be named, "Here comes the judge." Others of us would be named, "Let it slide, Clyde." And you get all this in one body. You get all these, "Here comes the judges." And you get all these, "Let's let it slide, Clydes." How are you going to bring them into one body? Well, by recognizing that that is simply the way it is. We are different in personality. We're different nationally, we're different in talents and gifts, and we're different in terms of personality. I want you to write this down, and this will be the principle that we're going to leave with you at this first part of the hour today. The first principle is this. Let me say it wrong first. I used to say that we must bring unity out of diversity without compromising our identity. Now that sounds pretty good. And for years I used to preach it like that, that we ought to bring unity out of the midst of diversity without sacrificing or compromising our identity. But that's not right. I'm convinced that that doesn't go far enough. That's not the biblical approach. I believe that we bring, or that God brings, unity out of diversity and thereby establishes our identity. Now say it again. I believe that unity must be brought out of diversity, and it is only thereby that we establish our identity. I believe that that's the way God communicates to the world that He's actually working among us, is when He can bring unity out of diversity and thereby establish our identity as followers of Jesus Christ. Okay, let's leave that for right now, and then I want to each day introduce to you some material that will address the friction and the oftentimes confusion and chaos that results from the crossroads ministers being brought into established congregations. Because this class was not advertised as relating to the crossroads ministry, I suspect some of you are here, maybe who wouldn't be here if you knew what the subject was. And I suspect that there are a lot of others who would have been here had they known what the subject was. So tomorrow you can go wherever you want to. You know what we're going to be talking about. But I think that the issue is vital, and we're going to be addressing it on a Christian basis with the Spirit of Christ, and we're going to be objective. There won't be any branding. There won't be anything except looking at it from both sides to see where the shortcomings are in the present system. And brethren, there are some shortcomings in the present system. And I know I'm not telling you something that you didn't know. We have shortcomings in the present established church. There are also some abuses in the present or current campus ministries, and you put these two together, put the current or the present day shortcomings of the present system, and put them in contact with the current abuses of the campus ministries, and I'll tell you what, if you can hang together when all that diversity and difference and disagreement exists, then it will really demonstrate that you have the Spirit of Jesus Christ. Now, in order for us to do this, today we're going to talk about some circumstances, the setting in which this book was written, and the contributing factors that seem to feed the friction and to feed the differences and the disagreements. We're going to look at just briefly some circumstances that led to the writing of the book. We're going to look at some internal practices that are going on in the movement. We're going to look at some complaints. We'll look at some explanations. And then we're going to look at some outside circumstances that are contributing to the fueling of the fires of adversity over this issue. And then the second and third days will be spent discussing four major areas of friction. when the Crossroads Brethren come into an established church, there are four areas that must be addressed and must be understood as to what's happening in order for us to be able to grapple with them with any understanding. These four areas are these. Number one, that of shepherding. Number two, that of evangelizing. Number three, the development of a mature morality. And number four, the exercise of discipline, the fellowshipping and disfellowshipping. These four areas, shepherding, evangelizing, the development of a mature morality, and then the practice or exercise of discipline in the sense of fellowship and disfellowship. These four areas, the shortcomings of the present system almost invariably mean that we underdo it. We under-shepherd, we under-evangelize, we under-bring people we're slower about it, and we are under-disciplining in the sense of withdrawing of fellowship. That kind of describes the basic flaw or deficiency in the present established church. We seem to kind of do it under. I don't mean undercover. I mean we don't do it like we ought to in the sense of intensity and in the sense of amount. Whereas the others, the new campus ministers and all that come in with these rip-roaring, people, these young people that are so full of energy, they come in and they almost inevitably over-shepherd and over-evangelize. And they bring in morality not by absorption like we do in the established church. They bring it in by injection. We want to get it done and get it done fast. But I don't want to preempt what we're going to be saying each of these days, but we're going to be talking about both sides to see if we can't kind of get a glimpse of who we are and what's happening among us, and to realize that the dynamic of friction in a congregation is from God. It's not from the devil. Your response to it may be from Satan, but the dynamic of struggle is kingdom dynamic. Paul said it is through much struggle that we enter into the kingdom. Now that's in Acts the 14th chapter and verse 23. Through much struggle we enter the kingdom. And we're going to be talking about that. Now, let me just very quickly give some of the setting or the surrounding circumstances and some of the setting that went into, and I know you're not particularly interested in why the book was written, but I want you to know that this really is just a transcription of the material that was delivered out at Tempe, Arizona. In early May of 1981, the elders of the church there called me and said, "Brother Woodruff, we're about to divide." The church in Tempe, Arizona had had a campus ministry working as an integral part of that work for nearly 9 years. At first, it was not related to the Crossroads movement, but gradually, with the bringing in of a woman's counselor to join the campus minister, the work began more and more to resemble the work in the campus ministry at Crossroads. So, over the years, there was the development of the tension, which is fine, but unresolved tension will drive you crazy. It'll just about tear you up if it's not resolved. So, the tension continued to increase without any resolution, it seemed, until finally it came to a crisis point. They called and said, "We are being threatened with division." Both sides were on the telephone, in a conference arrangement. There were probably six or eight people there representing both sides of the issue there in Tempe, Arizona. So they said, "Will you please come?" I said, "Are both sides inviting me?" They said, "Yes." I said, "Well, I'll try to come if both sides are inviting me and are open to change. If they're not, then it'd do me little good to come out there." But I went on May 22 and 23 and spoke to them on a Friday night and a Saturday morning, 3 hours Friday night, 3 hours Saturday morning. And out of that then, when it was concluded that Saturday morning about noon, several of the people there urged me to publish it for the purpose of helping other congregations work through some of these difficulties. And with this in mind, if we can get this discussion that is objective, if we can get some clarified definition of what's happening to us and why, if we can get that in print and get it out to congregations all over the United States in advance of their problem, if we can get it to them far enough in advance, before the emotions get involved, before the nerves get on edge, and we get all ragged in our dispositions, if we can do that, I believe that what's happening in the church today with the campus ministries and what's happening in the churches that are growing, I believe that one of the finest decades that the church in America has ever seen will be experienced by the church, provided we don't do like it's all too prone that we do. We do much like people today do in divorce. They just simply say, what's the point in staying together? Let's just split. And so we've been splitting, and we've been doing this for years and years, and we've got to stop it. And so I hope this will assist us in doing that. Okay, there are some internal practices and complaints that I'm just going to kind of list. I'm not going to have time to go through them and read the. You can get the book if you want to, and we're going to have them here. This has just come off the press. He says that we can have them here, and we'll have them here in some boxes, and you can come get one here. They're $5 a piece. They'll be in book corners and book houses over here in the exhibit area. Don't you tell him I said that. But they'll be over there, and what I want to urge you to do, I'm just going to read these. Here are some complaints. This was a memorandum sent by the elders to the campus minister and the women's counselor. This was their complaint, put in a form of a memorandum, and they were told this: the prayer relationship, that's a problem. Prayer partners. It's a good program per se, but the practice of confession in a junior-senior relationship is improper and must cease if it's practiced. Any instance where the person to whom sins have been confessed, passing on such information to others, is a violation of trust. Number two, attempt to preempt a person's time for the group activity. All of us need to be encouraged to give time and effort to the Lord. However, persons in the campus program or elsewhere in the congregation should not preempt another person's life. Now, these are pretty well universal complaints. Those of you who are familiar with the way that this ministry sometimes comes across are going to say, that rings true, it rings a bell. Attendance. While attendance at scheduled functions is good and to be encouraged, there are times when there are valid reasons for missing. It is good to inquire about absences, but there should not be a guilt trip attached. Number four, conditional attention, the withdrawal of love and attention when a person does not measure up to the leader's or the group's expectation, is not an acceptable approach. Degrees of spirituality is the fifth area of complaint. Creating the climate or impression of degrees of spirituality must be stopped. Excessive peer pressure, evident in these above items, whereby the peer pressure of the group becomes so terribly strong that there's the fear of being excluded if the people in question do not measure up to the standard of the group, not only in terms of quality, but do not comply in terms of time. And let me say one other thing. Don't let me forget to talk about the what happens in the transmission of a thought from one person to another, will you? Okay. And then dating, the prescribing of only double dating. And, you know, there is as much denial that these things happen or that they're making these rules. But what's happening is that this is what's coming across. And I'd like to just say right now, let's not get lost in just talking about, well, we don't say that. May I make this observation? Someone told me once, I take responsibility not only for what I say, but for what you hear me say. Now that catches you both coming and going. I take responsibility not only for what I say, but for what you hear me say. And if you say to me, you know, you make a charge against me, and I say, but I didn't say that. Well, if you say, but that's what I heard you say, then I'm going to say to you, then please forgive me for that, because I'll take the responsibility for what you hear me say. Okay, now, there is a tendency to press and either to make a legal requirement, not in writing, of course, but anyway, the double dating, and even to the point of finding out when you can date, there's some things that need to be addressed there. Physical appearance has been prescribed. They all are required to wear this or required not to wear that. That's been one of the complaints. Rebellion on the part of people in the movement. Often they're told you have a bad attitude. Or secondly, there's sin in your life and it needs to be gotten out. These are expressions that are common, and the elders were talking about, be careful that you don't squelch all questions and all diversity of opinion in the movement. Number 10, approaches to people evangelistically. We must reach out, these elders said. However, it needs to be done with conviction and prudence. And then congregational autonomy. This is another sore spot. These young people are being accused, and there's some substance to it, of calling back to Crossroads, calling back to Chuck. You know, at one group, they had just, someone told me yesterday, that the campus minister and the women's counselor called back 1 month 17 times. Well, you know, there's a record of that, and that just 17 times is too much dependency on a home congregation or on a former home congregation. But those are some of the complaints that are being made. And let me mention this. When we were in New Zealand, you'd be surprised at some of the things that our converts did as they tried to communicate what we told them to the next generation. I was shocked whenever they tried to communicate something to the next generation. In other words, we converted these people, and when the time came that they converted others and attempted to communicate the same kind of attitudes and principles that we had, I thought, clearly established, there was very little relationship between the two. It came up in the matter of morals. We gave those people, before we left, we gave them 4 full years of absolute, total freedom in the Lord Jesus Christ to watch our example, to be responsive to the Lord, and we gave them 4 years of time to grow up in the Lord into a mature morality. Guess what they did when they converted their converts? They put the thumb on them, they put the screws to them, and I'll tell you what, I just stood back in absolute astonishment. I said, have you forgotten what we did for you? I said, we let you work through those things day after day, week after week, year after year. We let you work through all these principles so that you could come out with a mature morality. And look what you've done. You've bound these things that you found to be good. You turned right around, having found them to be good, and you laid them right on this new convert and said, okay, you do it or else. You know, that wasn't quite as that strong, but they came across saying, look, you're going to have to do it or else get out. Well, the transmission of truth from one generation to another loses something in the translation. So I'm thinking that part of the problem in the Crossroads ministry is this. What took 10 years to accomplish at Gainesville with the Crossroads Church, when some young buck, some green upstart takes a hold of that, his life has been rescued from hell itself. When he takes a hold of that and goes out to a congregation, guess how long he wants it to take out there before he gets the same thing there that they had there? Would you believe 9 weeks? What, it took 9 years? Or you think, well, surely it'd take 9 months. Well, that would be pretty good. But sometimes, you know, they're just so anxious to get it started there like it is back there, but it took 9 or 10 years back there. And so I think the transmission of it from one to the other is part of the problem also. Okay, now, I'm not going to read the evaluation by the Tempe. I guess I better just mention it, though. There was an evaluation by a Tempe member. He says the present crisis, this man was an objective observer. He wasn't on either side. As well as I could figure out, he was sitting in the middle, and he made this objective observation. I'm just going to very quickly read it. The present crisis has come from relieving the campus minister and the women's counselor from the staff. Second, from revamping the campus minister. Reasons the elders presented for change, as I see it, he says. Number one, couldn't get these the women's counselor and the campus minister to change the group dynamics of campus ministry and all the problems it was causing. Secondly, they were challenging the authority of the elders, these two workers. Thirdly, they were doing some things contrary to the elders' instructions procedurally, did not involve doctrinal error or sin in the lives of these two, but they were also, they would not resign when requested. Now, that was something that was very obvious. They had been asked to resign, and they just wouldn't resign. So the elders sent them a letter of resignation, or sent them a letter of dismissal, continued their support for the next 9 months, or is it 90 days? I'm not sure. But anyway, that's quite a difference. But I think it was 90 days, 3 months. That's what it was. Then he says some basic problems that I have seen. Now listen to this. Communication between elders and congregation has been very poor. How much does that sound like the rest of the congregations that you know of? Part of the problem is that communication between the elders and the congregation is very poor. Elders tremendously overloaded in the past, not enough elders. How much does that sound like where maybe you are? Emotional men's meetings, men's business meetings, where, so I said, amen, where 5 to 6 hours at a sitting were devoted to mostly negative charges about the effect of campus ministry. Tapes were circulated by some members who are scared about crossroads-type problems arising here in the past 3 to 7 years. Division of opinion on how severe the campus problems are. Only the campus ministers were intimately involved in campus work. No elder or deacons assigned for that work only. Then he says there are directions of the campus work, three views. The view held by the group that was in favor of the work, of the campus work. It's the only ministry that has produced any number of conversions. Number two, close-knitness is necessary. Number three, has to be a total commitment-oriented program. Number four, all problems should have been handled individually, not publicly. Campus work cannot nursemaid the raised in the church children. And the bad image on the ASU campus was strictly persecution for righteousness' sake. That's the view held by those who were in favor of the campus ministry as it was. Secondly, the view held by those opposing the campus work. Number one, our quantity is there, but the quality is not built in or growing. Secondly, doing better about more general congregational involvement. Three, needs to be more rounded, not everyone becoming campus ministers and women's counselors. Four, group as a whole has to shape up, can't keep stamping out fires. Five, all they do is go to Crossroads, organize seminars. Six, the women's counselor gets direction from Crossroads, call Chuck, her spiritual father. Seven, too many casualties from campus work who never want to be a part at Broadway again. Eight, campus work has got to be able to pull in the raised in the church kids, and it won't do it. And then on and on. He says, then finally, my view, number three. Number one, to avoid close connection with Crossroads, but develop under the guidance of elders what they see as the direction this campus ministry must take. And then some of the campus problems have come from immature campus leaders going to Crossroads and returning and trying to match them and force some of their views at the local congregation. Now, this will kind of give you an idea about some of the friction and some of the specific things that were stated. We're not going to deal with those. We're going to deal with these four broad principles and let you see these all fall into these four broad principles. Now, before we go today, let me make these observations. There has been some outside contributing factors. The circulation of biased and inflammatory materials is definitely a factor in the problem. And you know the polarization that we're involved in. Ira Rice is contending for the faith. You know, you never have to stop and ask Ira or say to him, Ira, why don't you quit beating around the bush and tell us what you're talking about? No, he's very specific. But his material has a tendency to polarize. On the other end of it, there is an obvious elitism, an obvious exclusivism that is projected by, and I think promoted by, the Crossroads ministries when they come into a congregation. There's a kind of a pride among them that just about says, you know, if you don't do it our way, you're not doing it. Now, you can look at that as being youthful vigor, youthful zeal, however you may want to look at it, but that's one of the major criticisms that's being leveled against the campus ministry works. It's long on quoting about numbers and long on telling about how it ought to be done, and if a person is not connected with Crossroads,
they really don't have much to say, if anything. Now, that's been so obvious, I'm not revealing something out of school. This is just part of it. The outside circumstances, in the sense of inflammatory and biased materials being circulated in the form of tapes, papers, and seminars, that, but then also on the other side, there is a similar attitude of exclusivism and fragmentation in the sense of elitism and a sense of superiority that needs to be dealt with. We're going to wait until tomorrow to look at the general approach toward unity until you and I, as members of the body of Christ, rectify our general approach to the creating of unity in the church. Until we do some changes there, there's not going to be much hope for us. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. Finally, let me just make this observation, and I want you to think about this and come tomorrow and let's talk about it perhaps in another vein, but I want you to think about it tonight. I'm convinced that Crossroads is a microcosm. Now, a microcosm is a small reproduction. It's a small reproduction of the restoration movement as it was in its beginning years. Now, let me give you what I mean by that. I'm saying that the Crossroads movement among us is virtually a reproduction. It is a parallel movement that is so similar, if not identical, to the restoration movement as it began some 200 years ago that it's frightening. In the midst of an established religion of Christendom that was, so much of it was dead, so much of it was ineffectual, at that point, men like Barton W. Stone and Alexander Campbell and Thomas Campbell and others, here came this new campus ministry, if you please. Here they came, running and gunning, preaching the gospel. They were terribly evangelistic. They were people who didn't mind at all proselyting from you. We came in like a storm. We rode in through cities, through towns and villages. We captured some churches, just outright captured them. We split others wide open. And we baptized people, we rebaptized them by the thousands. History records that there was an average of 50 conversions every day, day in and day out, for 16 long years. The movement known as the Restoration Movement in America had 50 conversions every day for 16 consecutive years. We were going to town. Now, because of the evangelistic fervor, because of the conviction, because of what we were doing, you know, that we were so convicted about, and we were a close-knit group, and you know, you could meet one and you've met them all. These Campbellites, they're all alike. You've heard, and you just think about it, the criticisms that are being leveled against the campus ministry from Crossroads. I'm afraid, brethren, it sounds so much like us when we had our beginning of our movement back in the beginnings of the 19th century that it forces me to say they are our children. Whether we like to admit it or not, they are our children. Do you know what you detest the most in your own children? Your own characteristics that you yourself do. And it's all right in you, but you can't stand it when you see your children do it. Heaven forbid, but that's what we do. And listen, I'm afraid what's happened is this. They tolerated the church in the 18th century. The religious community tolerated us. They hated us. They tolerated us. And then they excommunicated us. And we lost the benefit of their presence. They lost the benefit of our presence. As a result, they didn't influence us with anything good. We didn't influence them with anything good. We separated, went our separate ways, and as a result, there's been no meeting of the minds since. I'm wondering if that's going to be what happens in the church with this particular movement. Are we going to be able, are we going to do this like they did us? Are we going to tolerate them, hate them, and then excommunicate them? Or will we find, perhaps for the first time in our history as a people, will we find the key to differ without dividing?